No doubt she is in hopes that the Gov will enter into conversation with her. But she is too good a parlor maid to let her hopes appear on her face. We may watch her manner with complete approval. There is not one of us who would not give her £26 a year. The master comes in quietly, a book in his hand, still the only book on the island, for he has not thought it worthwhile to build a printing press. His dress is not noticeably different from that of the others. The skins are similar, but perhaps these are a trifle more carefully cut, or he carries them better. One sees somehow that he has changed for his evening meal. There is an odd suggestion of a dinner jacket about his doeskin coat. It is perhaps too grave a face for a man of 32, as if he were overmuch immersed in affairs. Yet there is a sunny smile left to lighten it at times and bring back its youth. Perhaps too intellectual a face to pass as strictly handsome, not sufficiently suggestive of oats. His tall figure is very straight, slight rather than thick-set, but nobly muscular. His big hands, firm and hard with labor though they be, are finely shaped. Note the fingers so much more tapered, the nails better tended than those of his domestics. They are one of the many indications that he is of a superior breed. Such signs, as has often been pointed out, are infallible. A romantic figure, too. One can easily see why the womenfolk of this strong man's house both adore and fear him. He does not seem to notice who is waiting on him tonight, but inclines his head slightly to whoever it is, and she takes her place at the back of his chair. Mary respectfully places the menu shell before him, and he glances at it.
Clear, please.
Mary knocks on the screen, and a serving hutch in it opens, through which Tweeny offers two soup plates. Mary selects the clear, and the aperture is closed. She works the punkah while the master partakes of the soup.
An excellent soup, Polly. But still a trifle too rich.
Thank you.
The next course is the fish, and while it is being passed through the hutch, we have a glimpse of three jealous women. Mary's movements are so deft and noiseless that any observant spectator can see that she was born to wait at table.
Polly, you are a very smart girl.
La.
And I'm not the first you've heard of it from. I'll swear.
Oh, God.
Got any followers on the island, Polly?
Certainly not.
I thought that perhaps John or Ernest...
I don't say that it's for want of asking.
I'm sure it isn't. You may clear.
Flushed with pleasure, she puts before him a bird and vegetables, sees that his beaker is fitted with wine, and returns to the punkah. She would love to continue their conversation, but it is for him to decide. For a moment, he seems to have forgotten her.
Did you lose any arrows today?
Only one in Firefly Grove.
You were as far as that. How did you get across the Black Gorge?
I went across on the rope.
Hand over hand?
I wasn't in the least dizzy.
Brave girl. But never do that again.
It's such fun, Gov.
I forbid it.
I shall.
Polly.
He signs to her sharply to step forward. But for a moment, she holds back petulantly. And even when she does come, it is less obediently than like a naughty, sulky child. Nevertheless, with the forbearance that is characteristic of the man, he addresses her with grave gentleness rather than severely.
You must do as I tell you, you know.
I shan't.
We shall see. Frown at me, Polly. There, you do it at once. Clench your little fists. Stamp your feet. Bite your ribbons.
A student of women, or at least of this woman, he knows that she is about to do those things, and thus she seems to do them to order. Mary screws up her face like a baby and cries. He is immediately kind.
You child of nature. Was it cruel of me to wish to save you from harm?
I'm an ungracious wretch. Oh, God, I don't try half hard enough to please you. If only I could please you, God.
You do please me, child, very much. Very much indeed.
If he meant to say more, he checks himself. He looks at his plate.
No more. Thank you.
The simple island meal is ended, save for the walnuts and the wine, and Crichton is too busy a man to linger long over them. But he is a stickler for etiquette, and the table is cleared charmingly, though with dispatch, before they are placed before him. Mary is an artist with the crumb brush, and there are few arts more delightful to watch. Dusk has come sharply, and she turns on the electric light. It awakens Crichton from a reverie in which he has been regarding her.
Polly, there is only one thing about you that I don't quite like. That action of the hands.
What do I do?
So, like one washing them. I have noticed that the others tend to do it also. seems odd.
Oh, Gov, have you forgotten?
What?
That once upon a time a certain other person did that.
You mean myself?
She nods and he shudders.
Horrible.
You haven't for a very long time. Perhaps it is natural to servants.
That must be it, Polly.
Crichton rises. Mary looks up expectantly, but he only sighs and turns away.
You sighed, Gov.
Did I? I was thinking. I have always tried to do the right thing on this island. Above all, Polly, I want to do the right thing by you.
We all trust you. That is your reward, Gov.
And now I want a greater reward. Is it fair to you? Am I playing the game? Bill Crichton would like always to play the game. If we were in England...
He pauses so long that she breaks in softly.
We know now that we shall never see England again.
I am thinking of two people whom neither of us has seen for a long time. Lady Mary Lassenby and one Crichton, a butler.
He says the last word bravely, a word he once loved, though it is the most horrible of all words to him now.
That cold, haughty, insolent girl, Gov. Look around you and forget them both.
I had nigh forgotten them. He has had a chance, Polly, that butler, in these 2 years of becoming a man, and he has tried to take it. There have been many failures, but there has been some success, and with it I have let the past drop off me and turn my back on it. That butler seems a faraway figure to me now, and not myself. I hail him, but we scarce know each other. If I am to bring him back, it can only be done by force, for in my soul he is now abhorrent to me. But if I thought it best for you, I'd haul him back. I swear, as an honest man, I would bring him back with all his obsequious ways and deferential airs, and let you see the man you call your Gov melt forever into him who was your servant.
Hurt me. You say these things, but you say them like a king. To me, it is the past that was not real.
A king? I sometimes feel...
For a moment, the yellow light gleams in his green eyes. We remember suddenly what Treherne and Ernest said about his regal look. He checks himself.
I say it harshly. It is so hard to say. And all the time, there is another voice within me crying.
If it is the voice of nature.
I know it to be the voice of nature.
Then, if you want to say it very much, Gov, please say it to Polly Lazenby.
A king? Polly, some people hold that the soul but leaves one human tenement for another, and so lives on through all the ages. I have occasionally thought that, in some past existence, I may have been a king. It has all come to me so naturally. Not as if I had had to work it out, but as if I remembered. For ever the knightly years were gone, with the old world to the grave, I was a king in Babylon, and you were a Christian slave. It may have been. You hear me? It may have been.
It may have been.
I am lord over all. They are but hewers of wood and drawers of water for me. These shores are mine. Why should I hesitate? I have no longer any doubt. I do believe I am doing the right thing. Dear Polly, I've grown to love you. Are you afraid to mate with me?
She rocks her arms. No words will come from her.
I was a king in Babylon, and you were a Christian slave.
You are the most wonderful man I have ever known, and I am not afraid.
He takes her to him, reverently.